You're listening to Knowledge at Wharton on Business Radio. Here again is Dan Loney.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Knowledge at Wharton here on Sirius XM 132. Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. It is the 12th of November. Great having you join us wherever you are listening around the United States or up into Canada. Coming up here in hour number two, and in just a second, we'll be talking about the Keystone XL pipeline, which is back in the news as a federal judge has blocked the go-ahead given by the Trump administration for the project. He says the White House didn't really consider all the possible issues that could come into play when they green-lighted it. We'll talk about the legal challenge on this coming up in just a minute. And then in our final 30, it has been a very tense last week or two between President Trump and the media. CNN's Jim Acosta had his White House credential pulled. He has insulted at least one other reporter. So the question we have is, what is it that the president believes he is gaining by using some sort of these tactics? We'll talk about that coming up around 11:30 Eastern time. All of that in hour number two of our show. The way for you to join in is either by phone at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you'd like, send us a comment on Twitter at BizRadio132 or my Twitter account, which is at Dan Loney, L-O-N-E-Y-21. First, though, our number of the day. And our number of the day today is 8, as in $8. And we take note of that because of one of the legendary companies on Wall Street, General Electric, has now seen its share price drop below $8, which I think a lot of people wouldn't believe would have occurred if you think about the long history of General Electric. But it's the first time that GE's share price has slipped below $8 since March of 2009. Part of it was an interview done by the new CEO, Larry Culp, who says he feels the urgency of where GE is headed right now, and that the company is going to be selling off some assets to raise cash. But again, interesting. GE, one of the legendary companies in the United States, with their share price down below 8%, it has fallen better than 7% in trading earlier today. The stock fell earlier in trading as low as $7.72 a share. $8, our number of the day today, dealing with the dropping share price of General Electric. A federal judge has blocked further construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, saying the Trump administration hasn't presented a justification for the move. Last Thursday, that judge, Brian Morris of the U.S. District Court in Montana, said the Trump administration set aside issues of climate change in allowing the permit for the building of the pipeline. And in doing so, they violated the Administrative Procedure Act, which requires reasoned explanations for government decisions. Now, this is a blow for the president, who signed an executive order 2 days into his presidency to reverse the Obama administration's decision to stop the project. With more on this story, we're joined here in studio by Eric Ortz, professor of legal studies and business ethics here at the Wharton School, as well as director of the Initiative for Global Environmental Leadership. And also joining us on the phone, Felix Moorman, who's a law professor at Texas A&M University and faculty fellow at Stanford University's Steyer-Taylor Center for Energy Policy and Finance. And also with us is Brian Berkey, who's an assistant professor of legal studies and business ethics here at the Wharton School and of philosophy here at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also a fellow in residence at Harvard Safra Center for Ethics. Eric, great seeing you again.
Great to be here.
Thank you coming in. Brian, Felix, thank you for your time on the phone today, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So, Brian, what must the administration do now to kind of meet the judge's requirement? I mean, it sounds like they're going to have a deeper review of some kind if they want this to go forward.
Yeah, so, I mean, it looks like what they need to do is present kind of a reasoned case for the construction to move forward, right? A justification that's consistent with the requirements of the Administrative Procedures Act. And it's unclear how difficult it's going to be for them to do that. And I think a lot will hang on what the courts kind of in fact require and how they interpret this requirement to take into account the potential impact on climate change. So one reason to be a little bit skeptical that the administration is going to have that difficult a time meeting this requirement is that the impact of any one particular project, even project that's fairly large scale like the Keystone Pipeline, is not going to make that much difference. The experts seem to agree to kind of total emissions from, say, the U.S. and Canada, or how bad the effects of climate change will be in the long run, right? I mean, climate change is the result of a kind of massive collective action problem where, kind of actors all over the world over a long period of time are engaged in emission-causing activity. And no one particular project makes a big enough difference that, the courts will be able to say, well, in the absence of this particular project, the climate change harms will be significantly mitigated. And so if they interpret it in a way that just looks at the impact, the marginal impact of one particular project going forward, then it looks like no project can be blocked on the grounds of, it's by itself having a significant impact on climate change. So a lot's going to hang on the interpretation of that requirement.
Eric?
Yeah, it's basically right. I want to fill in for the listeners. It's a little bit complicated sometimes to understand these kinds of cases in their context. So the context of this case, and it's called Indigenous Environmental Network versus the U.S. State Department. And the reason why it's against the State Department is that a cross-border border permit had to be granted by the State Department because it's a pipeline from Canada and the oil sands there to the United States, connecting into the pipe network that would then take it down to take the oil sands refined from the oil sands to market in the Gulf. And so what happened in 2014 is that for this kind of permit, you have to do what's called an environmental impact statement. And that is required for any major government action. And so in 2014, one of these was done, and it was then considered, and the Obama administration decided, all things considered, it didn't make sense to grant the permit, so they denied the permit. And one of the reasons they denied the permit had to do with climate change and how this would be perceived within the international context of the Paris Agreement, right? Where we had signed on with other countries. So that was part of the context of this decision. And now what's happened is that the Trump administration, as you indicated at the top, the president had signed an executive order saying, no, let's reverse that. Let's build the Keystone Pipeline.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's not unfortunate. Fortunately, we live in a society that follows a rule of law, and you can't just govern by decree. So you have to follow the same kinds of process that you had followed to find a different order, and the courts have held you can't just reverse that. So Brian's correct that if the administration had gone through the correct analysis what's the effect of on this with respect to climate change, you could have a reasoned argument that this is approving this pipeline is really not going to make that big of a difference, et cetera.
Right.
What happened in this case, the EPA just discarded it. So they did zero analysis, right? So courts don't really approve of that kind of thing. And this is another in a string of losses that EPA and other government agencies under the Trump administration have been having, because they're going to court and they're not doing their homework. They don't have sufficient competent people who are looking at the argument, presenting it. So so there are two grounds. One was there was no analysis whatsoever given on the climate change impacts, and that had been covered in the 2014 environmental impact statement. So there's no reason why should the court change on that. There's no reason that they gave. The second thing that changed is oil markets. So in the first EIS, environmental impact statement, there was a projection of something like $100 to $140 per barrel going forward for the next 20 years that would help to justify this. And we know now that that almost immediately dropped to as low as $38 per barrel, and now it's around $60. And under the first assessment, it was kind of the break-even point was put at $65 to $75 dollars a barrel. So that's a big question, too. And again, the government just didn't provide the evidence. And so I think that's the main reason that, you know, it could, if you had a competent job done by the federal government, this might have passed muster. But as it is, the court, and I think I read the opinion, and a very fair opinion, basically said, I can't approve this on the basis of what you've submitted here.
So, Felix, take us into the legal side of this and your reaction to the judge's ruling, and then also where we are headed in this from a legal perspective.
So I think this is a very well-balanced and thoughtful opinion. It's 50-plus pages. I want to take a step back and help especially our listeners understand the three main statutes that are implicated in this decision. So first, as has already been mentioned, the Administrative Procedures Act. Second, the National Environmental Policy Act. And third, the Endangered Species Act. And what's interesting about that set of statutes is the first two, the Administrative Procedure Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, are not outcome-forcing statutes. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is the Supreme Court has held for NEPA, for instance, the National Environmental Policy Act, that it sets procedural duties, but only substantive goals. And that's exactly what Brian and Eric have been talking about. At the end of the day, the court is not here forcing the agency's hand. It is not telling the Department of State what the final outcome of its inquiry has to be, because neither statute mandates that. Rather, they mandate that the agency does its homework, that the agency take a hard look, and this is actually precedent language, at the issues raised, and especially to the extent that they differ, that the factual record differs the way it's being presented today from where it was in 2014. And that essentially means here, this doesn't mean the Keystone XL pipeline can never proceed. On the contrary, if the Department of State goes back to the drawing board, takes essentially the laundry list that the court has given the agency, and checks all the boxes, then it's conceivable that this could move forward with one caveat, and that's the third statute implicated. The Endangered Species Act is one of the few environmental, or one of the most forceful environmental statutes coming out of the 1970s, because if you do find that there's an endangered or a threatened species that'll be adversely affected by the project, then it becomes very, very difficult to proceed. The landmark case in this context pitted a 3-inch long fish, the snail daughter, against a billion-dollar hydroelectric project, a dam project. And it was remarkable that in the courts, at least, the fish prevailed. And so this is where that one angle could prove to be decisive going forward. But that said, I'm just happy to see that the court requires the administration to justify why it's changing its policy. And here again, the court is relying on a more recent case, the Fox case, where the Supreme Court, in a 4-1-4 decision, so very complicated and not exactly a landslide victory, required four boxes to be checked. And so the agency, if it wants to change course, if the Obama administration's course of action, that is to not allow the pipeline to move forward, is to be reversed, then you have to make sure that the agency displays awareness that it is changing its position, that it is making new policy. It has to show that the new policy is permissible under the statute, and that includes the Administrative Procedure Act and potentially other statutes. It also has to demonstrate that it believes the new policy to be superior, and it has to, and this is key again, provide good reasons for the new policy. And for now, this has been a rather rushed decision, rushed agency action, and that the courts will not support.
Eric?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right on the analysis of the opinion. I'd like to add that in the opinion itself, which again I think is quite a balanced opinion, it was written by a judge who was appointed by President Obama, but who had Republican credentials. So the judge had clerked for Chief Justice Rehnquist, mm-hmm. and had previously clerked for a Court of Appeals Judge, Judge Noonan, who was also appointed by a Republican. So it seems like we have a centrist kind of judge, and I think the expected attacks that this is a political opinion, et cetera, I think would be quite misplaced. But I wanted to add that the judge found on the Endangered Species Act, and that's correct, Felix is correct, that is a showstopper kind of statute. So if you could show an endangered species is in the way of the pipeline, then that would stop it. However, as I read the opinion, at least, I think the judge went through about five or six of the endangered species that were claimed to be affected by this and basically said, it looks to me like all of these there are conservation plans in place that are not going to affect these species. So it's not so that doesn't seem like they're ready to the judge would stop it in that respect. Now the other problem though is they're reviewing the case now, but on the assumption they appeal it to the Ninth Circuit or they now do the homework and stop and do the homework. You have to remember this is a business proposition, and every delay in a business deal is going to decrease the probability that you're going to be able to get it done. So you're talking now another postponement. It's already been 2 years. You have this decision, which basically says, no, you failed to follow the law. I'm ordering an injunction. I'm stopping the pipeline. Now you're going to have an appeal, or they're going to do their homework. Then they'll come back to court. There'll still be a challenge. And by that time, if it's another 2 years, what do you have coming up is a new election. So then you could have a different president who is not so favorable. It goes back in favor. If you had a Democratic president, I would assume that you would have a more pro climate change policy made. Maybe a desire to invest rather than in pipelines in infrastructure networks for renewable energy, et cetera. So what you've essentially done is you're increasing the risk to the project. And at some point, it might be that the Canadians and the company that is involved here just going to say, this is an $8 billion project. The uncertainty is getting too large. We are going to basically go away and stop the project. One other thing that had not been considered that the judge noted that we should talk about is the oil spills question. So in the first environmental impact statement, basically it said, well, there'll be one oil spill every once in a while. But in the 3 years since you've had that decision, there have been eight major significant spills from the pipeline, including one on the Keystone. So that has to be factored in as well. It's like, what does the cost-benefit analysis look like? How do you deal with those things? So you really have to have competent people who are looking at all these issues and moving it forward. And right now, it looks like you don't have that. You don't really have the competency within the Trump administration to handle these issues. And as I indicated before, this is another string. There are a lot of losses. There's a huge losing streak that the Trump administration is now building up on environmental cases, because they basically aren't doing their homework. They're acting like they just can change the law, maybe change some judges. It's just not going to move that fast. The judges believe in the law. They're going to enforce the law, and they're going to require the Trump administration to do their homework.
Brian, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, all of that seems right. And I think, one of the important things to keep an eye on is, what the company, TransCanada, decides to do with the project, going forward, given that they're likely to face continued delays because of this decision. Now, I mean, that their statements after the decision suggest that, they continue to be interested in sort of pursuing the project. I mean, they're kind of making public statements suggesting that they're not kind of giving up on building the pipeline. But I think Eric's exactly right that, as we get closer to the 2020 election and, the delays continue because, the administration seems to not be doing a very good job of, gathering the kind of evidence and making the case that they need to make in order to kind of get these policy changes approved in the courts. I think there's going to be more reason for the company to kind of reconsider its position on the issue.
But Felix, do you think that this is a type of project, even with these delays and this money already invested, and give us a sense of the oil industry and what this pipeline could potentially mean for a company like TransCanada of waiting this process out, of working this through to get this project potentially done?
So I think if we look at the track record, this is not new. I mean, this has been ongoing as a litigation theme for about 10 years. So clearly there's enough at stake for TransCanada to want to pursue this. Now, where we reach the pain point where they say, okay, it's not worth this anymore, remains to be seen. But I think it's very important to, as you say, look at the development of oil prices. And this is a new opinion. Eric brought it up. I think at the close of markets on Friday, the barrel of crude oil was coming off its longest losing streak, 10 consecutive days, since 1984. Hmm. And that, you know, should give you pause, especially mm-hmm. when, as little as 4 years ago, the projections were that we would be well above $100 per barrel. And again, we're below 60 at this point. So that is an issue. There's another added component. And when the court talks about cumulative greenhouse gas emissions impact and some changes in the factual background, it references the competing pipeline, the Alberta Clipper pipeline. So there is another project that connects Alberta's tar sands to the U.S. pipeline system. And so the question is what that does to TransCanada's business prospects. Now, apparently they seem to think there's still enough room for profit and enough of a margin there to proceed, but we'll have to see. I'd like to add one other thing on the subject of the Endangered Species Act, because Eric is entirely correct that part of what makes this opinion so balanced is that one by one, the judge walks through different species and essentially explains why the handling of any impact was correct by the Department of State. But then in the context of the oil spills that Eric also referenced and their increased frequency and the fact that it's now become clear that crude oil from tar sands has a different texture, is harder to clean up once it's spilled, and hence creates more issues. There, in the very last opinion, in the very last paragraph of the opinion before the actual orders, the court says, for that reason, the agency has to go back. It vacates essentially the biological assessment dating back to 2012 and Fish and Wildlife Service's biological opinion. These are the two types of inquiries that check whether any threatened or endangered species will be adversely affected. It remands, vacates those, and sends the agency back to the drawing board. And this is why I think even under the Endangered Species Act, we haven't seen the last of it. And so I completely agree that the agency is going to be hard pushed to get this wrapped up before the next election.
Eric, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think that's an excellent point. And whenever you have a requirement like that, go back to the drawing board, redo a scientific study, redo an economic analysis, consider the price of oil, consider these other kinds of issues. It's added delay. And so that's the strategy, I think, if you look at the environmental groups, Sierra Club, the indigenous groups, et cetera, is the longer you don't get this, the longer you can delay this, the more likely it is that the economics are not going to work out and or that you have a political change at the top in terms of the federal government, and they're gonna give up the project, and that's why environmental groups are declaring a victory on this case so far.
So, Felix, what should we expect now on the legal side of this moving forward here in the next several weeks? And obviously, the process is going to take some time to be able to get through.
So the court essentially requires the Department of State to put together yet another supplementary environmental impact statement, because even the 2014 doc was already a supplementary environmental impact statement. That's how long this case has been going on. So it's going to have to do that. On the Endangered Species Act, it's going to have to redo the biological assessment and then engage with Fish and Wildlife Service, so another agency, to have their biological opinion. All of this will, of course, take time. But here's a very interesting wrinkle to this. As Eric points out, in the past, in many cases, for the environmental groups that opposed these kinds of projects, it was sufficient to play for time because time was on their side. One of the most famous examples of this strategy working out is the New York Westway project, where there was supposed to be a highway built along the west side of Manhattan, and it never came to fruition because eventually those interested parties walked away. But there's another potential route this could take, and that's because the Department of State here is acting under delegated authority. It's essentially acting under presidential authority, because the background why there's authority to permit cross-border infrastructure is based on the president's foreign affairs powers. Now, back in 1968, President Johnson delegated, using the executive order, that power to the Department of State. In 2004, President Bush amended with another executive order that power, saying if the project is in the national interest, then the Department of State should do this. And that's exactly where we are right now. But in theory, at least, a lot of these statutes do not apply to presidential action. The statutes, National Environmental Policy Act, for instance, applies to federal agency action. That does not include the president, him or herself. And that means that, at least in theory, it's conceivable that President Trump would issue another executive order amending this delegation, maybe revoking the delegation altogether, and then issue the permit himself under his foreign affairs power. And it's anybody's guess how courts would treat that. But constitutionally speaking, it's very conceivable.
Brian, your thoughts?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not an expert on the legal issues, and so that's extremely interesting that the president might be able to kind of rescind the authority given to the State Department and just kind of attempt to issue the permit himself. This would, I think, raise a number of very interesting and complex issues. I mean, one thing to add to the discussion of TransCanada's position is that, you know, because the Keystone Pipeline has taken on this kind of outsized political significance, right? I mean, it's kind of significance in the news and in the kind of public debates about climate change and the oil industry and so on, has been much greater than, you know, its actual likely kind of impact relative to other, you know, oil-related projects on climate change. I think both the industry and the environmentalists have a greater interest in kind of playing out the legal process and kind of keeping up the fight than they would for kind of any project that hadn't gotten the kind of media attention that Keystone has gotten. And so I think that may make it the case that the kind of economic considerations that are kind of limited to the project itself may not be enough to prevent TransCanada, for example, from you know, continuing to you know, at least publicly state its intention to move forward with the project and kind of keep up the legal fight, because there's a kind of symbolic significance to the case that kind of goes beyond the, you know, kind of cost-benefit analysis.
Sure. Yeah.
Applied to the you know, the you know, the economics of the project itself, and so I think that's something that is going to be important to keep in mind as we kind of assess the decision making that might conceivably seem to go against the economics.
Eric?
Yeah, I think that's right. I find Felix's theory interesting. I think that's quite possible that the Trump administration, in any event, they're considering what to do,
yeah,
and they might take this approach. I guess even if they take that approach, it would still be challenged. You'd have another case in the district court on this with a judge who has already ruled against them and will probably see this as an attempt to do an end around. And then maybe not so favorable to it. And the Ninth Circuit has also seen cases where they just recently struck down an attempt to unban a pesticide. So they basically said, no, EPA got the science wrong and you must ban this pesticide. So I don't really see the Ninth Circuit as being too favorable. So then you're talking about a case that might have to go all the way to the Supreme Court. And again, it seems to me that that plays into the delay tactic. So even if you win long term, there's another benefit, just to pick up on what Brian's saying, of the environmental groups keeping this in the news, right?
Yeah.
So that it's a symbolic value, but also it's a political value for them to be keeping it in the news. And at some point, my sense is, and you can't predict oil markets. We can make a lot more money if we knew what the future was going to be on that. But I think that you don't know the future. But my sense is that this is really looking like a less and less good business deal, even from the point of view of the company that is proposing it.
Great having you all with us today, Eric. Thanks for coming in. Greatly appreciate it. Felix, Brian, thank you for your time on the phone today. Thank you both.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Eric Orts from here at the Wharton School. Brian Berkey, also from the Wharton School and the University of Pennsylvania. And Felix Mormon from Texas A&M University. We'll take a break. Final 30 coming up in just a minute. After the break, we talk about President Trump and the media. They have been foes for quite some time now. and it heated up once again last week. We'll delve into that in just a minute. SiriusXM 132, Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School.